All right. So this is the first of at least two, possibly three, shiurim, in which we're going to be talking about the Gemara in actually the beginning of Perek Zayin. Yeah, we've been doing Perek Vav in Bava Metzia, the sixth chapter all year long, but now we're actually moving into the beginning of Perek Zayin, still dealing with Schiris Poelim, dealing with hiring workers. That part is still the same, and actually now it's Schiras Poelim, technically. Right before it was Schiras Umnin, now it's Schiras Poelim. excuse me. This is a big, broad topic, which I'm going to try to stick close to the sugya, certainly for today and into next week, before discussing some of the larger issues that that emerge. So this discussion is about Minag HaMedina, local practice, and in particular the local commercial practice, not really commercial, I shouldn't say commercial, local employment practices, and the question of the binding character of whatever policies have developed in local employer-employee relations. So there is an awful lot to talk about this. It is a big topic. It's also very big in Bava Basra, in commercial practices. But here, in our Masechta, we're talking about two particular issues. Three particular issues. Wages, food, and time. The what people expect to be paid, whether the workers expect to be fed, and how long do the workers expect to work. And the question of the power of local practice to establish a default, whether that default can be waived, and so on. But I want to begin with a source that the lawyers here will appreciate, and that is from the Chafetz Chaim in source Aleph. The Chafetz Chaim, the end of the first Chelek of Avas Chesed. You can see it's Chelek Aleph, Yud, Yud Gimel. For anyone who hasn't learned Avas Chesed before from the Chafetz Chaim, it's really something to learn. I would certainly recommend it. And this is a little ha'ara, it's a little footnote that he has, in which he writes, Ve'agav, along the way, atik bekan mikuntra sfas tamim sheli. I'm going to quote my own essay called Sfat Tamim. Davar etza achas, hanogeya le'inyan iser gezel va'oshek schar sachir. It's a piece of advice related to the prohibition against stealing and cheating a worker of his wages. Anytime you get somebody else to do some kind of a job for you, for which you're going to pay, yiktzov imo hamekach batchila, you should first set whatever the terms of the agreement are. De'ilav hachi, because if you don't do that, alu mi'od li'yos gazlan va'oshek schar sachir, it's very likely you will become a thief and a cheater of the employee. Im lo yirtza li'yos vatran gadol b'mamono k'dei latzeis min hasafek, unless on every doubt and issue that comes up, you're just going to forgive things and say, well, I'll give you whatever you want. If you don't establish the terms in the beginning, anytime there's a case of uncertainty, one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to forgive it, or you're going to run the risk that you're taking something you don't have a right to take. He says you're going to need to hire people for hundreds of things across the year. I don't know where the number comes from. And it's very common that there are disputes afterwards regarding payment. And afterwards, each side thinks that they got cheated. Achshena rotzela rivima, and just says, "Well, I don't want to fight with him, so fine, I'll be mochel, avaleinu mochel ovalev shalem." But he doesn't actually forgive it. You can read it. Just see the bowl towards the end. Yiktzov imo betchila veyetze midei kol safek, or as the lawyers will tell you, put it in writing. Put it in writing. Don't get into all the issues that we are going to be discussing. Now, the truth is, this doesn't get you around all the issues we're going to discuss, because one of the issues we have to talk about is whether you are allowed to veer from communal norms. In other words, even if you put in writing, even if the employee says, you know, the norm is that I have a right to X, but I'm going to be mochel it. And you say, well, I'm getting it in writing from him. That may not work anyway. So it doesn't always work, but at least you want your agreements to be clear from the beginning, and that's something that we're going to definitely see here. We're going to honor Minhagim, but you should get everything in writing, avoid hard feelings, and worse problems. Okay, having said that, we're going to start out with the opening Gemara of Mishnah and Gemara of our Perek, and follow it on with a related Yerushalmi. And it's talking about establishing the hours of labor. So source base begins with our Mishnah. Hasochar es ha-poelim. You hire workers. I'm not getting into poel uman and so on. It's not relevant for our discussion. Va'amar lahem lahashkim ulaharif. And you told them, I want you to arrive really early, or I want you to stay really late. Makom shenagu shelo lahashkim v'shelo laharif ein arasha lechofan. In the event that this is a place where people don't normally get there early, or don't normally stay late, you cannot compel them. Meaning, you hired them, you said, I want you to be here at 5 a.m., we're going to discuss whether you said that at the time you hired them or later, we're going to come back to that, but but you say, I want you here at 5 a.m., and they say, too bad, nobody here shows up before 8, he can't say, well, then I'm docking your pay. He can't say that I'm not paying you. That's lachofan. To compel them would have been by imposing a financial penalty for not doing what was asked. Makom shenagu lizon yizon, lasapek masika yasapek. If the practice locally is to provide meals, if the practice is to give them sweets, then that's what you have to provide. Hakol kemina gamedina. Everything is governed by whatever the norm is locally. Clear so far? Good, that's our Mishnah. You can't force people to veer from the default hours. So the Gemara asks, Pshita, of course you can't compel them to stay late or to go early. And what we're going to see is that what we're talking about, according to almost everyone, is a case in which you hired them without stipulating anything regarding the hours. You just said, I'm hiring you to work for me. And then after you hired them, you said, okay, I want you here at 5. That will be our conclusion about how to read this Gemara. So I'm going to work with that right now. We'll discuss more about how you get there later. So it's obvious that if I hire workers and then afterwards I say, I want you to show up at 5 a.m., that's my problem. I can't enforce that. So the Gemara says, well, not so fast. Here's why we needed to say that. Lo tzricha detafa lahu a'agrayu. You needed this because of the case in which the boss actually paid more than standard wages. So the norm is that people make $15 an hour. The boss paid $25 an hour because he was anticipating that he was going to get them to show up at 5 a.m. So ma'u disema omar lahu. I might have said that he could say to them, the reason why I added to your salary was with the intention that you would rise early or that you would stay late with me. Kamash malan de amrule hay de tafas lan adaita de abdin on Allah avidita shapirta. And the Mishnah is teaching me that they could just as easily say back, that's not why you added. The reason you added was because you wanted $25 work. If you hire a guy who gets paid $15 an hour, you're going to get $15 an hour work. You hire a guy, you pay him $25, he's going to work harder, he's going to work better. That's the way that this agreement could have been parsed. There's more to talk about with that. But that's the idea. Now, as we're going to discuss below, there are two ways that you could really read this. It's going to be a machlokes trumas hadesh and the ketzos hachoshen. The ketzos hachoshen is going to read this as the boss paid more. We knew that he wanted longer hours, but we don't care. Minhag is stronger than his intent, even though we knew what he wanted. Everybody knew when he said, I'm paying 25 instead of 15, everybody knew he expected us to come early and to stay late. And we just said, yeah, that's nice. Minhag is stronger. That's one school of thought. The Trumas HaDeshen, as well as the Netziv, are going to disagree and say no, that there were multiple ways to interpret his intent. It was legitimate to say it was for more hours. And it was legitimate to say he wanted more work, and you could go either way. And the employees chose to interpret it that it was to get better work. We'll come back to that idea, but I'm just noting that now, that there are two ways to read that line in the Gemara. Okay. Then we get a comment from Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish's comment took me a very long time to work through, and you'll see, if you flip to the end of the source sheet for a second, you'll see a table. There are six different ways to read what Reish Lakish is talking about in this table. We're not going to finish Reish Lakish today. I think we're going to get stuck in the middle of Reish Lakish today. But we'll do what we can at any rate. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says, Po'el b'chnisaso mishalo b'itziaso mishabala bias. I don't even want to translate this line because I don't want to bias everybody in the way that they read it. But you have to, because otherwise you're just, why am I reading the Gemara at all? So Reish Lakish says, I'm going to read it one way right now, that the worker, when he goes to work, has to give of his own time in order to get there, so that he can get there and start working at the earliest possible time. Be it CSO, when he leaves work, Mishal Balabayas, he could take that off of the Balabayas' time. The Balabayas had a right for him to stay until 8 p.m. I'm making that up. He's allowed to say, I'm leaving at 7:30 so I can be home by 8 o'clock. If the Balabayas, or to put it differently, if the Balabayas' rights are for 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., so he has to leave his house at 7:30 in order to be there at 8. But on the other hand, he can leave work at 7:30 in order to be home by 8. That's one way to take Reish Lakish's comment. Shenemar, and I have a pasuk. Pasuk from Tehillim, from Barchi Nafshi, as a matter of fact, Tehillim Kuf Dalet. Tizrah HaShemesh Yaseifun Ve'el Me'onosam Yerbatsun. The animals go back to their homes when the sun rises. The animals who are out at night, they go back to their ma'on, they go back to their dens. Yetze Adam L'Falo, and a person goes off to work at that point. V'la'avodaso Adei Arev, and to his work until evening. And again, there's a lot of discussion about what exactly this pasuk is meant to prove. I don't want to bias anything, so right now I'm just going to tell you that it's establishing that the hours of work begin at Tizrach HaShemesh, begin when the sun comes up, and end at Erev. That does not prove anything about who's responsible for travel time, beginning or end of the day. That we have to come back to. So the Reish Lakish says, these are the rules. Okay? The rules are, and again, taking one way to read Reish Lakish, you go to work in the morning on your own time. You leave work at the end of the day on the boss's time. By the way, this also does not yet address what if someone works the night shift. Right? At that point, how does it work? So we have to talk about that as well. But the Gemara says, I don't understand what you're talking about, Reish Lakish. Why are you bringing me a pasuk to try to demonstrate what the hours are? V'lefzi hechi nehigi. I don't understand. Why not just see what the minhag is? I'm drawing on a pasuk. Tell me, what do people do? Do they go to work at 8 or do they go to work at 7:30? Be'ir Chadasha. It's a brand new city, new population. V'nechzim hecha ka'asu. Okay, but they came from somewhere. What was the practice in the place they came from? Right? If they picked up and moved. If all of the B'nai Torah community picked up and moved to Thornhill, Thornhill is now brand new. So, at that point, they just bring with them the practices from B'nai Torah. Yeah, but it's B'nai Kutoi. It's talking about where they came from many different places. So it wasn't just coming from B'nai Torah. It was from Bathurst Manor, and it was from Clanton Park, and it was from Bathurst Lawrence. All these different places came together with their own practices. Ibay Yisema, or alternatively, Da Amar Lahu, Da Grisuli Kapal Da Oraisa, or alternatively, it's where the arrangement was made. I'm going to hire you to have the hours of a biblical laborer. So therefore, I need the pasuk in order to tell me what a biblical laborer is. So again, what we get out of this is possibly an establishment of default hours of labor, according to Reish Lakish, and that even if you pay more, you can't say, well, that was because I wanted the late hours. That's basically what emerges from here, those two principles. There is some kind of kavua set of hours, and even if you pay more, you can't say it was for late hours, and I guess also, going back to the Mishnah, the importance of and the power of minhag. Okay. Good. Clear so far, or questions? We good. Okay. So, that brings us to the Yerushalmi. Amar Rav Hoshaya, source Gimel, after having the same Mishnah that we have here, Rav Hoshaya says, Zos omeres haminog mevatel es hahalacha. He says, this shows that minog overrides halacha. What we're going to see here, I should have said first, is the following. Number one, that normally, if you want to get something, you have to prove that you have a right to it. Hamotzi mechaveru alav araya. You want to prove someone should give you something, sell you something, whatever it is? Demonstrate that you have a right to it. That's number one. Number two, according to Rabbi Imi in our Gemara, and possibly Rav Hoshaya as well, local minhag is itself proof that you have a right to it. Whatever the local practice is, demonstrate that you have a right to it. And you'll see what I mean when we get into the cases. But in our Gemara, Rav Hoshaya says, this Mishnah shows me that minhag overrides halacha. So I will ask you to tell me, what is it about the Mishnah that tells me that minhag overrides halacha, and which minhagim and which halachos are you talking about? What does that mean? This Mishnah teaches me that minhag overrides halacha. Where did you get that from, Rav Hoshaya?
Well, there's biblical working hours based on Sister Hashem and Shia Seifun or whatever. And the minhag says you don't call those hours. That might be an example of the minhag king of halacha.
So you're saying that he is drawing on Reish Lakish's idea, even though the Mishnah did not say Reish Lakish's idea. Our Mishnah said nothing about Pasuk-based labor hours. Our Mishnah only talked about what the boss wants and what local practice is. It didn't bring halacha into the discussion.
It's fair, but as long as he has a Mishnah, there is such a thing.
But where did that come from? This is a hard read. Rabbi Yaris, you were going to say? Or not? You unmuted. No. Okay. It's very unclear to me, at any rate, what exactly this is about. When you say minhag is mevatel halacha. So yes, Ezra, we're going to see the Yerushalmi. We're going in order. I would give you two reads of what Rav Hoshaya is saying here. My personal read would have been to read it like the Bavli, which is to say that our case is where the employers say, I thought I was getting you to stay late. The employer says, I thought I was paying you $25 an hour because you were going to work longer hours. And minhag overrides the assumptions that he made. That's one way to read it. It's not really overriding halacha. It's overriding his assumptions. That would be one way to read it. Or to put it to the way that Ezer did when he gave Chabura on this topic, minhag is only strong enough to matter when we don't have any other information. That's the idea. That's one way to look at what Rav Hoshaya is trying to say here. The Pnei Moshe says no. If you take a look at Source Dalid, jump down to the Pnei Moshe. He's commenting on Rav Hoshaya. He says that's not the case. Zos omeres, midiksani eino yochol lachofan, from the fact that it says he can't compel them, mashma, afilu omer shehisna imahim amanas lahashkim ulahariv. Even if he says to them, before he hires them, I want you to go early, I want you to stay late, hey makrishin oso, and they say no, eino yachol achufan velispo, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. Afilu Omer Shehisna Imahem. Even if he says that when he hired them, he made such a condition of longer hours. They machishna, so when they say no, there was no such conversation. No one filed the Chavetz Chaim's idea. No one put it in writing. Okay? So he says, when I hired you, I said it's gonna be 5 AM to 10 PM. And they say, we don't know what you're talking about. That conversation never happened. So, Eino Yachol Achufan Velispos Charan, he's not able to compel them in this, to follow the hours that he claims, and to say, if not, I'm taking back money from you. Levishayna Minakach, because that's not the Minhag. Shmamina Minag Mevatel Halacha. That Minog is going to override Halacha, like Rabbi Yimi in the next line in the Gemara. So the way that Pnei Moshe understands it is that the case that Rav Hoshaya is talking about is not the simple case of, I hired you, I paid you more, it's because I wanted to get more out of you, and we're saying, too bad, follow Minog. It's talking about the case where the employer says, we had a deal to work late, and they say there was no such deal. There was no such agreement at all. And what he's saying is, there is a halacha. The halacha is, hamotzi mechaver al avaraya. You want to get something from somebody? Prove you have a right to it. And in this case, they are the ones who need to prove that there was no such agreement in order to get the money out of him. But Minog will override it and act as a raya. You follow? In other words, Rav Hoshaya says, let me try one other way to frame this. Rav Hoshaya says, Minhag Mivatel Halacha. One way to read it is what he really means is not Minhag Mivatel Halacha, but rather what he means is Minhag establishes default. That's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to say, no, Minhag overrides Hamotzi Mechavero Alavaraya. It overrides a known halacha that says you want to get something from somebody, you have to prove you have a right to it. Minog works as your proof, even though it's not proof at all. Clear? I got a thumbs up there.
Can I ask something?
Yes, Maishi, please ask something.
Okay, definitely. If it's the first way that Minog establishes when there's no other information, then isn't that the same as it said at the end of our Mishnah? I'll call you Minog Avedina.
Say it again. If we're saying...
First way.
Yeah.
If Minog establishes there's no other information.
Yes.
So what is it adding? Is the original already said, then I call Minog Avedina?
Correct. If you take the first approach, what he is saying here doesn't really add anything as much as it's sort of synopsizing in a neat formulation what we're trying to say. It's the same thing as saying Hakol Kaminog HaMedina, but I think he's giving it a very strong, simple but strong framing by saying Minog Mevatel Halacha. Or to put it differently, if I were to walk into a group of people and say to them, you know, Hakol Kaminog HaMedina, nobody would raise an eyebrow. If I walk into a group of people and say Minog Mevatel Halacha, oh boy, that starts a war. You know, I dropped a grenade.
The whole point of the first approach is that it doesn't actually move on.
Right. He's effectively giving our Mishnah a stronger formulation than it deserves. Because he has not said it actually overrides Halacha. You're correct. That doesn't bother me. I think you're right. I mean, the Pnei Moshe doesn't read it that way. He doesn't read it that way. But what we're going to see when we go through the Bavli leads more towards the first approach. We'll see when we get there. I'm sorry.
It bothers me because, like, well, it's so similar. It's like, I'm hoping he's going to, like, teach us something extra. And he does teach us something extra, but it's false. You know?
Right, so it's not false in the end. Right now, it's unsubstantiated. But when we get through the Bavli, you will see practical applications of this idea. In other words, even if he has not given us a case in which Minog overrides Halacha, by the time we are done, we will see cases other than the Hamotzi Mechaver Olav Araya one in which Minog does override Halacha.
Okay, so we're not saying that he's just saying that when there's no other information, it actually is going to override.
See, I, I know that he's going to be annoyed with me for saying this, but I feel like in the end, we are going to say that that everybody is of that view, even if Rav Hoshaya here, in the first way of taking it, didn't say so. You'll see. You'll see what I mean. I think. But yes, I think that in the end, he's going to be stronger than what it currently sounds like. The kind of weak version that we assigned to him in the first read. Just to show you, Rav Imi goes on with in the Yerushalmi, going back in Source Gimel, the Motzi Mechaver Olav Haraya case. So Rav Imi says, "Kalamotzi Mechaver Olav Lahavi Raya Chutz Mizu." You want to get something from someone? You better bring proof you have a right to it, except for this case. And then he tells you, "Bnei Tveria Lo Mashkimin V'Lo Mariven." The people of Tveria don't rise early and don't stay late. And that's just the way it is. B'nei beis ma'on mashkimin u'mariven. B'nei Tveria sh'ol l'sachar beis ma'on niskarin b'beis ma'on. B'nei beis ma'on sh'yod l'sachar b'tveria niskarin b'tveria. Wherever you are, that's what establishes the norm. So people of Tveria don't do long hours. People of beis ma'on do long hours. People from Tveria get hired in beis ma'on, you follow the local practice. People of beis ma'on get hired in Tveria, you follow local practice. Aval sh'ol and b'tveria l'sachar pol, I suppose, me base ma'on. But if somebody comes into Tveria and says, "I want to hire people in base ma'on, because in base ma'on they do long hours," they can say back, "Kain sagat machshavas chon de lo havein a mashkach megra pol in Tveria." Ela begin to shamas alecha. I'm sorry, he can say to them, "Ela begin to shamas alecha." They are two mashkilim ma'arivin. Begin kain istalkes acha. He can say to them, "I came here because I like the way you work, and therefore I expect you to honor that when you work for me." And then it goes into what happens if there's no minhag. Makom shein minhag, Yehuda ben Buni, Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yehuda say, "Tonight, based in who? Shetehei hashkama shal polin, v'arava shal balabayis." We're told that where there is no minhag, it is a tnai bezdin. It is a condition set. This is what Ezra was referring to in the chat. It is a condition that is set by bezdin that you're going to follow the following rules. That when you rise early, that is of the poelin. When you stay late, it is of the balabayis. We have the same confusion here about the same confusion we have with Reish Lakish. We're going to apply here of what exactly that line means. We're going to have to come back to it. And then he quotes us Tehillim Kuf Dalid about the animals being out at night, and then in the morning you go to work. And then the Gemara goes on to discuss Erev Shabbos. For those who want more about the two reads of Rav Hoshaya, by the way, and an interesting idea regarding the Rambam's view, I gave you a link in Source Hay for Ezer's Chabura, and you can hear his discussion of it in a very interesting way that he wants to read the Rambam. Okay. That is the sum of the Gemara that we're going to have to build on here. We have a Mishnah that says, Hakol Kaminag Medina, we follow local practice. We have a Gemara in the Bavli, which says that when he says, "I'm paying you extra because I want you to do more, to work longer hours," the answer is you lose. You lose because we could say you paid us more for better work, which we said could be either we knew you wanted it to be for longer hours, but we're not listening to you, or we legitimately could say you wanted it to be for better work. And then you have this vague comment from Reish Lakish, a version of which appears in the Yerushalmi as well, in which he says, "Baruch Hinafshi teaches me that people work during the daylight hours." So we need to understand more about what's going on, and so I'm breaking this up into a few different topics. The first subtopic that we have to look at is the question of what happens if a worker says, "I am going to forgive my communal custom rights. Minhag HaMakom says I don't need to get up until 9 in the morning, and I can leave work at 4 in the afternoon. But when you hired me, you said, I want you to start work at 7 and work until 7 in the evening. And I said, okay. Is that now binding? Or can I say, yeah, I said okay, but it's really 9 to 4. How does that work? So we look back at our Mishnah. Based on our Mishnah, where we said the employer cannot demand that they stay late, even if he paid extra, is that a case where they actually forgave their rights, and therefore we're saying forgiving doesn't work? What would you say, based on your read of the Mishnah? Is the Mishnah's case where, from the get-go, he told them he wanted longer hours, or no?
Doesn't seem there's any distinction in the Mishnah.
Meaning?
I mean, why would you assume that the Mishnah is not talking about that case? Isn't either a shallow point?
So, Rav Sami says, you could read the Mishnah to say, even where he told them from the start, I want long hours. And they said, you bet. Nonetheless, he can't compel them. He can't withhold any salary if they don't stay late. Even though they agreed to it. In other words, forgiving doesn't work. You can still say, Minhag HaMedina, too bad, union rules. That's one way to read it. The alternative way to read it is, no, he hired them stam. He didn't tell them that he expected them to stay late, and then they come back and say, we didn't know that that was what you meant. So, the Mromei Sadeh, also known as the Netziv, makes a compelling case for what Rav Sami said. Makes a compelling case for saying that even where you said you're paying them extra, nonetheless, I'm sorry, even when you said, I want you to work late, and they said yes, they're not bound by it. Minhag HaMedina is stronger. And the way the Netziv does it, and I brought it for you in source Vav, first of all, he quotes Yutosfos, who we're going to see, says that this is talking about where he hired them without specifying that he wanted them to work longer hours. You have to know that. But the Netziv comments on it, and he says no. He says, I'll walk you through the Gemara. And I think the easiest way to do this is actually not to read the Netziv inside, even though I bolded it and everything. I think that it's actually easier for me to explain it outside, and you can follow along with the Netziv. What the Netziv says is this. The Gemara's assumption is we don't work at night. Why don't we work at night? I'm asking you this question. What's the rationale for saying we don't work at night? Why not work at night? I work at night. What's the rationale for a system that says don't work at night?
No sunlight.
No sunlight makes it hard. That would be one way to take it. Give me another explanation.
You have to learn Torah.
Yeah, learn Torah at night. This is true. We're going to talk about that from the Torah Chaim a little bit later. What else?
Dangerous.
It's dangerous. Didn't you read the pasuk from Baruch Hinafshi? There are wild animals out at night. You don't want to be out at night. The Netziv says that's the assumption of the Gemara. Is that we don't work at night because it's dangerous to work at night. And that's what Reish Lakish brought the pasuk for. So therefore, he says, the employer says, I want you to work at night. And they say, whatever you say, man. It's obvious they're not bound by it because nighttime is dangerous. So the Gemara says, it's pshita. The Gemara challenges and says, it's obvious that they're not held to that agreement. Why did you need to tell me that they're not held to that agreement? To which the Gemara answers, yeah, but he added more money. And therefore I would think, not that that entitles him to compel them, but it entitles him to a refund. Right? Not that you can force them to work late, but if you pay them extra money and you told them you wanted them to stay late, you should be able to go back to them and say, okay, fine. You're not going to stay late, but I'm going to give you only 15. I'm not giving you 25. That's what I would have thought. And so our mission is chiddush. What the mission is trying to say is that there's no refund. Everybody knows you can't force them to work when it's dangerous. But the chiddush of the Mishnah is, there's no refund. Because you knew your condition was unenforceable. You only made it because you really wanted to get extra good work. That's the Netziv's idea for how you could read our Mishnah to be talking about where he told them from the get-go, I want you to work late. And they said yes, or at least they didn't demur. And nonetheless, they're going to be, they're not going to have to work late. However, sorry?
Why? Oh, why?
Ah, so that's where the Netziv gets hung up.
More money.
Good. That's where the Nitziv gets hung up. And he says, this reed is a great reed. However, it doesn't make any sense. He says, I can explain all the lines in the Gemara this way. But flip the page to side number two, the middle of the Nitziv there. He says, Kol zeh hayahadaz nosein beferish hasugya. He says, this is a great way to read the Gemara. Aval be'emes lokeinu adin. The problem is it's wrong. Ela empirish, almanaz la'ashkim ula'ariv, vaday mechuyiv lakayim. If the guy said, you must do long hours, and they said, okay, then yeah, they have to fulfill it. But what about danger? Shalom b'chomakom havisakana. Not every situation is dangerous. Where is the work? Is it in the field? Is it in the city? What kind of work are you doing? What kind of animals live in the area? It's not always dangerous. So he says, the answer really is that the case in our Mishnah is talking about where he hired them without telling them that he wanted them to work late and only came to them after that. That's the way that the Nitziv says you have to read it. Even though I have succeeded in making the Gemara fit, it's not the law. So he drops this reed, and instead he joins with, basically, everybody else under the sun. Tosvos, the Ritva, the Ramach Bar and the Shita Mekubetzes, the Meiri, they all say that our case is where you hired them stam. If you hired them saying, I want you to work in non-union hours, and they said yes, then the answer is yes. Don't read too much into the union discussion, because what if there are rules that have already been set? Like, that's a whole other discussion. We're just dealing with default minhag, not really a union case. But take a look at Tosfos in source Zion, where he says, Hasochos apol and baral mahashkim ulahariv, our Mishnah, pirish ri, bisheskharan stama. He hired them stam. V'amalem achasheskiran kvar, and after he'd already hired them, he said to them, lahashkim ulahariv, longer hours. Avlam hisna meikara hakolafit, no. But if that was the condition from the start, then you follow the condition. So workers are able to forgive the minhag. That would be the idea. And therefore, let me ask you a question. What happens in this case? You made the condition at the start. You told them, I want long hours. Right? You said that from the beginning. And they said, uh-huh. And then they start working and they don't do the long hours. What happens? There's an easy one. This is a softball. For Sammy, don't answer, please. What happens now, based on what we've just said? Pesach, you're muted. Or maybe that's on purpose. We've just said the workers are able to be mochel, right? The workers are able to forgive. So what happens if they did forgive? They signed on knowing that he was demanding long hours. And then after they signed on for long hours, they decided not to go through with it. So what's going to happen?
He gets a refund.
Yeah. So writes the Mi'iri explicitly. So writes anybody who's been following. That's got to be so. The only thing that really bothers me enough that I put it on your sheet is the Ramach in the Shita, the part that I bolded. He says in source class, "Vim hisnei ma'in tchila akach." If he stipulated it from the start, afilu b'makum shalonagu, even if that's not local practice, t'nai mamonu. It's a t'nai mamon. It's a financial agreement that the two of them made. V'nira lomar de'yachal achofen alkach. It appears logical to say he can compel it. V'tzarech iyun. I don't know what kind of iyun you're tzarech. I think that's clear. The Ramach was one of those who said, our Mishnah was talking about stam. He's not with the Nitziv in the Merom Esadeh and the Havamina. I don't understand why he says tzarech iyun.
From the Rav Esadeh, it seems like there's still an idea that if it actually is dangerous, you don't have to follow through. Because he doesn't say that they have to do it because they made it tonight. He says they have to do it because in some places it's not dangerous.
Well, and since in some places it's not dangerous, therefore their agreement is in fact binding.
Well, even in a place that is actually dangerous.
Right, so that was an interesting question. is would they have to? And I think the answer is they wouldn't have to, but they wouldn't get paid the extra money. Because you agreed, based on the principle that he, you know, that based on the hours that he asked for. I would think so.
So there would be an idea where, like, you can actually go against an agreement that you made just because you don't feel like it.
Well, that goes back to the discussion we had earlier this year before you signed on, and the question of Sheyus Yisraelo Yasu Avlo and Taromes and so on. That was an earlier discussion about whether you can back out and under what terms. What if conditions changed? Does that allow you to back out? When you were hired, everybody thought that the world was safe. However, then there was an infestation of coyotes, and now it's not safe. So then you could back out without any claim against you. It depends on what the circumstances were. Where, Sammy, you were going to say?
Yeah, I just thought, I mean, we were discussing this with the guy at the theater, that maybe he's surfing is on the Yahola Kufa. What exactly does that mean?
Why isn't it garnishing their wages, the way we've talked about until now?
Right, I mean, that's not what Yahola Kufa literally means. It means make them be Masha Mar. That's what it really means.
Yeah, but what does make them mean if not garnishing their wages?
Right, so I think his Sarathian is, I mean, I'm just guessing, but maybe Sarathian is, like, can you really actually say, like, you gotta actually be Masha Mar? I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Yeah. I mean, no, when Ezra gave his Habura, he noted that maybe it means something else, but I don't see any basis for going that route. I don't know what to do with this Sarachim. But in any case, the world follows Tosfos on this. The Taras Chaim notes in Source Tess that the Medrash that Tosfos brings against Rabbeinu Hananel has wording that might not quite fit. We didn't get to this yet. We're not going to get to this today. It's already 10 after 11. But Tosfos is going to try to prove his understanding of Reish Lakish against that of Rabbeinu Hananel by drawing on the language that's used in a Medrash and Bereishis Rabbah that talks about hours. So Tosfos is medayik in the language of that Medrash, as do other Rishonim, as we'll see. So the Taras Chaim says, well, I'm looking at that same Medrash in Source Tess. Ava gab the Medrash Rabbah Sheviya Tosfos, l'kamon, garsinon, upasak imahem lahashkimu l'ha'ariv. That's the way they read our case in the Mishnah. Not, he said it to them, which is kind of waffly, like it could be said to them before, it could be said to them later, but upasak imahem. Upasak imahem means he set those terms from the get-go. It sounds like supporting the Rome Sadeh read. Sarach Lomar, Lishta de Pasak, Lav Davka Nakat. Yeah, it doesn't really mean Pasak. It means Omar. The Elak Lomar Shomer Lamkach. He says, I'm with Tosfos, and I'm not going to be bothered by that, by the language in that Medrash. That's the idea. So they are able to be Mochel if they wish. And in the event that they go back on the mechila they made, they may lose wages, despite the Ramach's Tzarech Iyun. The Mara Panim on the Yerushalmi, which I brought you here in Source Yud, he says that Rabbi Imi, who said Minag Mevatel Halacha, will also agree to this idea. He says, Im Hisna Meikara Hakol Lefi Tna'o. If he made it tonight from the beginning, then you follow the tonight. Uch de pasak hatur va shulchan aruch simin shin lamed aleph. The tur and the shulchan aruch say that. Vizem vaday muskamu. He says, of course that's true. Everybody agrees with that. Ve'im she Rambam zal sasam dvarav kan. Granted, the Rambam does not paskin our case at all. He doesn't bring it. Samach halaklal shekasev le'el. He relied on the cloud that he gave, which you see in Source Yid Aleph, where the Rambam is talking about Shomrim. And he says, masne shomer chinam lios. The Shomer Chinam, who normally has to swear, they can make a condition, I'll only become a Shomer Chinam if you're not going to make me swear. And even though a borrower generally has to pay for most types of harm to the object he was borrowing, he can say from the beginning, I'm borrowing it, but only on condition that I don't have to pay. And so on and so forth. End of the line in Yud Aleph. Shekol Tznai B'mamon O B'Shvul Shamamon Kayam. He says, you can make whatever tonight you want, and it's binding. that's the position that the Maraponim sees in the Rambam. And again, go back to Ezra's Chabura, because he didn't like that read of the Rambam. Two last brief notes on this point of being mochel on the minhag. If you are able to be mochel, then what happens if they start working without being mochel? In other words, local practice is you work from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. However, the guy says, I want you to work 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Day one, they show up and work 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And then they realize, no, we don't want to do that at all. That wasn't fun. So they come back and say, we're not doing that. So the Ramach says they can back out. Now, presumably that's the case, again, where he was not masna, where there was no condition stipulated at the time of the hiring. Because, again, then you're bound by your word. But that was one note. Other note, just again, the case of the Stam. Okay, he hired them without stipulating anything. Then they say, we're not working long hours. And he says, but I paid you extra. And they say, yeah, we thought that meant that you wanted better work. So what happens if they don't do better work? What if they do normal work? So the Meiri writes in Yud Beis, Umikomakom im lo asu malachtam yafa mishar palim, if they don't work better than others do, menakalahem bitosefto, he is actually able to say, then fine, I'm only paying you $15 an hour. You did $15 an hour work. V'yesh cholkin bezu, he says some disagree, shamikomakom far asu bakachol shav shalahem, because they did the best they could. A for effort. You get 25. It's your fault that you paid them more, expecting to get more out of them. They're not capable of more. They did what they could. Interesting. Okay. So that's all under the banner of forgiving what the communal minhag entitled you to. But another thing that came up here in this discussion is interesting and worth taking a moment to discuss, which is, is it legitimate to mind read an employer based on the amount of money that he paid? Right? That's what we're doing. Right? He says, I paid you extra because I wanted you to work longer hours. And they say, well, actually, we thought you paid us extra because you wanted better work. Is that legitimate? The principle is called Hadamim Modian. That the money that he puts up demonstrates what his intent was. We find this idea in a Mishnah in Bava Basra regarding purchases in Source Yud Gimel. Macharas hakaron lamacharas hapirdos, macharas hapirdos lamacharas hakaron. You sell a wagon, you didn't necessarily sell the animals that are pulling the wagon. You sold the animals that are pulling the wagon, that doesn't mean the wagon comes along with it, right? There's a whole body of real estate law that relates to this in terms of you buy a house, what goes along with the house and what does not go along with the house. So he says, the machas etzemer lamachas abakar, you sold the yoke, that doesn't mean the oxen come with it. Machas abakar, you sold the oxen lamachas etzemer, you didn't sell the yoke. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Hadamim Modiin, and Rabbi Yehuda says, we look at how much money the guy is paying. Right? If on the standard market the oxen are going for $10,000 and a yoke is going for $5,000, and he paid $15,000 when he said, I'm here to buy the yoke. And he paid $15,000. Clearly, he meant to buy the animals as well. And one of two things is going to happen. Either you're going to send him the animals, or you're going to refuse, and he's going to knock $10,000 off the purchase price. That's the way that Rabbi Yehuda argues there. Now, the truth is, we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. That's worth knowing. Nonetheless, it sets up the concept that we're employing here in the Gemara, where we talk about interpreting the employer's intent based on the amount of money that he paid. So does that work, or doesn't it work? That takes us back to the Trumas Hadeshen and the Ktzos that I mentioned to you before. Take a look, please, at Source Yud Dalet. The Trumas Hadeshen had a case. I'm going to give you the case outside in the interests of time. The case he had was that somebody hired a courier. I want you to take my letters, whatever it is, from Toronto to Batavia. Okay, take my letters to Batavia. The guy says, yes, boss. Okay, takes the job. The guy who hired him then leaves town. He goes off to Hamilton. Or he says he's going to Hamilton, but he actually goes to Montreal. And then the courier is waiting to leave town and go bring the letters to Batavia, and he says, you know, I'm not really clear on whether he understood that he also has to pay me for my travel expenditures. This is going to cost money. There are tolls along the way. There's gas. I have to quarantine for 2 weeks afterwards. There are costs that I'm incurring to make this journey. And local practice is that you pay those separately. Those are not included in the core fee. So what does he do? Because the guy who hired him is out of town. So he goes to a few people and he says to them, you should know, he hired me to do this job. I am doing it with the understanding that the payment that he promised me is just for the job and doesn't count expenses. Expenses are going to be billed separately. And he went and he did the job. And then he came back to town and said to the guy, here's the receipts, you know, I need you to reimburse me. And the fellow says, I don't know what you're talking about. I paid you extra because I wanted that to cover the expenses. That was why I paid you more. And everybody knows he did pay him more. There's no debate. He paid him more than the going rate for this job. So take a look at Source Yadalit and what the Truma Sadeshin says. Tshuva, it's the middle of Source Yadalit. He says, Reuven, the boss, is right. For the reason that he said, you can tell by the amount of money that he promised that in fact he intended it to be for everything, for the expenses as well. Shimon acknowledges that he paid more than should have been warranted if it's just the payment for going. Granted that, Reuven acknowledges that what he did was unusual. Normally you have a separate fee for the travel expenses. And you can say, we can tell what you intended. Granted, we don't actually paskin like Rabbi Yudin Baba Basra, who says Adam and Modian. We follow the Tanakhama in that Mishnah. The amount of money you gave is irrelevant. Nonetheless, he says, the Ashri there, quoting Rabbi Tam, say what I put in bold, Da filu rabbanan modim da adam and modian hecha de ein makhtishin ikar halashon. He says, if the message sent by the increased sum of money is consistent with the language that the employer used when he hired them, then we follow the money. We follow what the money said. And he says, that's true in this case. The language that he used was consistent with the idea that he was paying him for the travel expenses as well. That's the idea of the Truma Sadeshin. We follow what he meant. Damim Modian. We follow what he says he meant. Damim Modian is going to override Minhag. The Ktzos says not so fast. He says if you believe that Damim Modian is actually stronger than Minhag, then why did our Gemara reject the idea that paying extra demanded longer hours? Demonstrated that he wanted longer hours. Right? If you believe Damim Modian, then go back to our Gemara. He says, I pay you 25 instead of 15 because I wanted longer hours. Why is it, says the Ksos, that we're not willing to say that's what he wanted? That's the Damim Modian. You follow it. Take a look at Tetzvah, Butmil and Milsa. He's challenging the Truma Sadeshin. Our Gemara says, "B'makom shenagu shalahashkim v'laharev," in a place where they do not normally work long hours. Da'afilu hosif alscharan, even if he adds, "Lo matzi amara da'itet v'lahashkim v'laharev," he can't say that I did it in order to get longer hours out of you. V'lo amrinan adamim modian. We don't say damim modian.
Because you're choosing between two different things.
What do you mean?
Did he mean longer hours, or did he mean better work?
Right.
So we go back to our Gemara, right? We're saying what he meant here was, I pay you more, not they work longer.
Yeah, hold your question for a second, because I want to make sure that I get through this with the nativ, and then I can do it. I just noticed the clock. So hold the thought, Jeffrey, please. It's the Ketzos versus the Trumas Hadeshen. The Trumas Hadeshen says the Dama Modian is better evidence of intent than the Minhag is. And the Ketzos says, if that were true, then we would have said that Dama Modian, that he wanted longer hours. He says, obviously, Minhag is stronger. But the Netziv says, not so fast. The Netziv in the Meromei Sadeh says, I actually like what the Trumas Hadeshen is saying, that you may say Damim Modi, and I brought it for you in Tezayin. He says, he says, the conclusion of the Gemara was to say, we thought you added in order to get better work. The Gemara needed to provide that answer. If you were right, Ketos HaChoshen, that we don't believe in Damim Modian at all, then you wouldn't have needed to say, I gave extra in order to get better, you gave extra in order to get better work. You would have just said, you didn't say what you meant. And we don't say Damim Modian. Right? If you really believe Damim Modian doesn't work, then the answer when he says, I gave you extra, is to say, too bad. You follow? That's what the Netziv says. When he says, but I paid you extra, they should say, that's nice. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Done. The Gemara didn't do that. The Gemara said, yeah, but there was another way to interpret, and this may answer what you're asking, Jeffrey. There was another way to interpret what you did here. There was another way to interpret your adding money. It could mean you want long hours. It could mean you want better work. The implication is that Damim Modian is significant. It's just that here, Damim Modian led to a vague result, which I think is what you were trying to say, Jeffrey. Damim Modian could lead in two different directions. Sorry?
Yeah, that's the point. Our case is different.
Right. Our case is different.
We're following Damim Modian, but we don't know which one we're following.
Correct. Correct. So that's the answer of the Netziv, as well as the answer of Jeffrey, is that we do believe in Damim Modian in our case, even if not in Bava Basra. So again, just to sum up what we've done here, we understood from our Mishnah that Minhag is strong enough, Minhag Amakom is strong enough, that at the least it sets the default expectations. Such that if he comes back later and says, I wanted something different, we say to him, too bad. We had the idea within the Yerushalmi that potentially it could be even stronger than that. Local minhag can override a halachic principle of hamotzi mechaveru alav haraya. That was Rabbi Imi's idea. We're going to have to see more next week, God willing, about just what minhag can override. We said that in the event that there was a tanai, that the worker actually agreed, I'm going to forgive my rights, then they are indeed forgiven. Our Mishnah was only a case of stam, despite the Netziv floating that other way to read the Mishnah, and therefore, if they are mochel, then they're bound to stick to that, and if they don't, they have wages garnished. And it is legitimate, according to the Trumas Hadeshen and according to the Meromei Sadeh, to mind read what the employer meant. However, you have to know what he actually meant. Meaning, if there are two different possibilities, then you can go with one. You can go with the other. So what I want to do next time is understand what Reish Lakish was doing with the pasuk, which will give us new insights into the interaction between Minhag and Halacha. What happens when the Torah sets one set of hours and Minhag sets a different set of hours, and especially when Sakana is thrown into the mix. So we'll do that with Reish Lakish next time, and then I want to talk about the question overall of why is it that Minhag is so strong? The classic two different views, which anyone who's been preparing has already seen, is it because everybody agrees to the Minhag? Or is it because the Halacha says follow the Minhag? So we'll have to see that, God willing, next week. Okay? Have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos. Shabbos. Shabbos. Shabbos. Shabbos. Shabbos.